from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, wherever you are listening from, and whether you're listening live or you're listening to our podcast, you are most welcome to be here. We're grateful for your listenership. Tonight, we are going to talk about, if we must, that guy who is sitting in the White House, the reality TV star, who is elected by fiat of a group of people in this country who really wanted him just to get in there and screw up the government. Well, they're getting their wish. He's created a shutdown, and we're going to talk about the ramifications of that shutdown. He can shut down the country, but he can't shut us up. So we are going to talk. We are also going to talk about the very first openly gay governor in the United States who took office yesterday. So congratulations to him and his family and his state. We are going to discuss that a little further. And we're going to talk about the Liberty Council. You remember those guys. They're the ones that thought backing Kim Davis was a great idea. Well, now that enormous brain trust of goodness has decided that they want to lobby Congress on an anti-lynching bill that would protect, among other people, people from being lynched based on their sexual orientation or their gender identity. And these guys really don't want gay people or transgender people to be protected from lynching. And naturally, that being out in the public, certain people have taken umbrage to that, some in an inappropriate way, and called in death threats to these people. And now they're playing the big victim card because, I don't know, somebody offered to do them harm when they wanted protections dropped from doing harm to other people. So in a classic, you know, you get what you, you know, what goes around comes around, coming back around, and they don't like it. But I don't think they're quite getting the irony of it. So without further ado, though, I want to bring on my co-host for the evening, Brody Levesque. Good evening, Brody.
Good evening, Rob, and good evening to our listeners. I'm going to start the evening off with a little quote here that I think absolutely encapsulates what has been going on for quite a while. Winds are in the east, mist is coming in, like something is brewing, about to begin. Can't put my finger on what lies in store, but I fear what's to happen all happened before. And that, to me, ladies and gentlemen, is how we're going to start our conversation. So, Rob, where do you want to begin? We've got all sorts of places to dive in at.
Okay, well, let me cut to the chase on the shutdown. Because I've got a question for you directly that we're going to get into the absurdities that the orange-haired one is pulling and pontificating on and the damage he is causing. But I have a kind of a basic question. At this point, why isn't the media pulling back from him and focusing in on particularly Mitch McConnell and the Republicans, who at this point could very easily sit down with the Democrats, come up with a compromise plan, find a two-thirds majority across the board that would pass it, and it doesn't matter what goofball wants or doesn't want, it would be veto-proof. Why is that not happening?
Honestly, I don't know. One of the biggest problems that I am seeing, and I'm saying this because I'm a senior editor and a senior journalist, and I'm going to footnote that with, I don't work for an American broadcast outlet. I don't work for an American media operation. I actually am a member of the foreign press. American corporate media has a problem. Today, for example, in the beginning session of the Senate, Leader McConnell made it abundantly clear that there wasn't any way that he was going to let any legislation pass through. Now, mind you, these are pieces of legislation that the Republicans themselves passed with an over 90 majority vote. The Speaker Pelosi just ran through the House that would fund the government, and then a separate continuing resolution until February 8th for the Department of Homeland Security. And McConnell sat there and said, I'm not going to do anything because we can't get a presidential signature. Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland was very quick to point out to McConnell that he was full of feces. You know, the Congress is a co-equal branch of the American government. There are enough votes in both houses of Congress to override a presidential veto. So the problem really is Mitch McConnell and the fact that he's an obstructionist. I think that the media is having a hard time with that because they're not understanding the lay of the land. It's become, quite frankly, an embarrassment to watch my profession continually and continuously get it wrong. The New York Times has screwed the pooch on this. Even a mighty Washington Post has missed the boat. The broadcast outlets are probably the worst offenders. Yeah, at the end of the day, they aren't really making it extremely clear to the American public just how much damage this reality television star masquerading as a president is actually doing. Now, we're starting to see some pushback. I will have to give NBC News credits. Lester Holt last night talked about the deceptions, the misleading statements, and quite frankly, the lies. Today, we saw the same thing. Yet, my hometown paper and its Washington bureau chief, Daniel Dale, the Toronto Star, was a little bit more clear about it. The lead paragraph, U.S. President Donald Trump lied his way through a visit to the Mexican border on Thursday, returning again and again to false claims as he attempted to promote his proposed wall project. Now, that is a Canadian outlet. NBC is finally getting it, but there's a serious problem with these other outlets. And then, you know, the overarching problem with this is Trump himself. He lives in a bubble of Fox News. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, calling it state television is pretty damn accurate. McConnell is obstructing the United States Senate. Speaker Pelosi pushed through Republican legislation. Minority Leader Schumer, the whip, Dick Durbin from Illinois, Hardin from Maryland, Van Hollen from Maryland, the respected Patrick Leahy from Vermont, every single senator on the Democratic side stood up and, why weren't you guys passed this stuff in December before we went to Congress? You guys passed this. We're saying we will give you this legislation. We will even do a continuing resolution until February 8th for Homeland Security on the border security issue, which will allow the federal government to reopen, and then we can get on with business. So at the end of the day, where the American media is really missing the point is that it's not just Trump holding 800,000 federal employees plus, I forget, another 123,000 contract employees hostage. The Senate Majority Leader is just as guilty and just as culpable. There is absolutely no excuse that McConnell can give reasonably as a co-equal part of the government, and they've got the votes to override a presidential veto. And I'm watching the American media go, this, and this. It's like, guys, McConnell's just as guilty. He's probably even more guilty because unlike Trump, he spent a long time in the Senate. He knows the machinations of the American government. He knows budgetary constraints. He knows how the system works. please.
No, yeah, I would say, I mean, I'm right on board with you. I would say equally as culpable, if not more, and worthy at this point in the shutdown, in my opinion, of the media focus. I mean, I think the media is, here's the thing with the media in this. Donald mm-hmm. Trump getting media over him telling falsehoods, you know, he loves that. He wants the attention, good, bad, indifferent. He just wants the attention. He wants the ratings. And whether it's the media going into spinning over how he's telling falsehoods, he's fine with that. His base is fine with that. But the one who is not so keen on being in the crucible is McConnell, and he's the one that deserves it. Because he's the one who can actually do something right now.
He's the Senate Majority Leader has the ability. He's got the vote. If they were to vote on those pieces of legislation and a continuing resolution, Schumer has already said he'll get the entire Democratic caucus behind it. That'll push the vote damn near the 95 mark. That's veto-proof. Pelosi's already got the House there. Trump can veto it all he wants, okay? It goes back. They can override the presidential veto. This is so simple. But there is a serious disease in McConnell and the Republican Party. I'll give you an example. We learned earlier today that Republican Party members in Tarrant County, Texas, which is in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area, will be voting, or they did vote earlier today, to remove their vice chairman, okay, Dr. Shalid Shafi, who is Muslim, because he's Muslim. Texas, these Republicans are moving to oust a vice chairman who's Muslim because he is Muslim. This is the exact same problem on Capitol Hill. You know, Trump has manufactured a crisis that doesn't exist, and McConnell is going along with it. You had, people yesterday standing behind Schumer and everybody else. These are federal workers, mind you. They want to work. This is getting close to economic catastrophe, okay? And you know, there's analysis after analysis after analysis in the Washington Post and in the New York Times and in the Atlantic and Salon. Yeah, I've even written some, The longer this keeps going on, the more drastic the results are going to be, okay? And I mean this very seriously. We're talking seriously negative things going on. This is an economic issue. Trump is holding with McConnell hostage for no reason. This is a vanity project. The truth of the matter is there is no crisis on the border. Trump is lying. In my feed, they did a drug bust in Philadelphia, okay, of fentanyl, and we're talking a lot of it, all right? Philadelphia, not the southern border. He screams about MS-13, and he starts talking about, all these people are coming across the border and this and that. Arrests for illegal border crossings have hit a 46-year low. Let me repeat that. Arrests for illegal border crossings have hit a 46-year low. Absolutely no justification for this. And here's the thing that kills me. Do you want to know who announced that? His own Homeland Security people in December. Arrests of people trying to cross illegally plunged to the lowest level since 1971. Now, conversely, immigration arrests in the significant problem of visa overstays, which is the bulk of illegal immigration in the United States, increased by 25%. So what are we going to do? We're going to build a wall around Chicago or, Iowa? I mean, really, it's just that it kind of boils down to that. These are not, and you go study an analysis, Rob, after analysis after analysis, okay? It's not the illegal border crossing. That right. Now you have to play the race card. Go ahead.
Let's talk about the proposed wall itself.
Okay.
First of all, there's some rumor that some of it has been built, and then it was like, no, it was just funding to repair some barriers that were already there. And then the discussions seem to be to imply that the amount of wall that is actually being discussed is actually fairly minimal. It's just some, you know, parts of California, some parts of Arizona, not really, you know, this formidable multi-state, you know, Wall of China type wall. What are they actually talking about?
This is where it gets a little confusing. First, you have to take a look at the situation in terms of the border itself. The vast majority of undocumented migrants are coming across principally in Texas, parts of Arizona, and California. That's it. There's entire sections that they don't cross at, and the main reason being is because it's an environmental factor. It is so harsh. Now, there's entire sections of the border along the Rio Grande and what we call the Rio Grande Valley where you literally can't put a wall up, okay, unless you're going to run the damn thing through the middle of the river. And then, of course, the other part of the problem is there is a tremendous amount of privately held land in the areas where, you know, they want to put this thing in. Now, the wall is actually, it's kind of a metaphor. The base construction has been a steel slat construction. We've seen it in California, most notably, along the border between Calico, Mexico, and, of course, San Ysidro, right there along that section there. There are similar parts, steel slats, also in Texas. It's kind of one of these things where, you know, the wall is in place in terms of a great deal of it's been there for a while. I mean, this is nothing new. There has been some upgrade, if you will, and there's been some additions, but nothing really to speak of in terms of what the Trump administration has done. The thing that has kind of boosted border security in some of those other areas is that the border protection folks have been using drones. They have been using sophisticated sensors, cameras, remote cameras, remote vehicles, things like that. But the vast majority of the undocumented and the migrants are actually coming across, in other areas. Now, that's not to say there still isn't, you know, a high traffic area that's got, you know, it's problematic, as there is, for example, in the Rio Grande area. I know when I was down there a few months ago, we took a tour. Border Customs folks took us along a tour, including the area where Trump was today on his visit. And if you really see what, you know, is there, you kind of understand that, you know, this idea of a Great Wall of China is not only ludicrous, but it probably won't work. There are more effective means by which they can stop the flow of the migrations. But again, you know, the thing that's kind of telling for that, and even your Border Customs Protection people will tell you this, you know, people trying to get into the U.S. from Mexico has dropped. It's just, you know, there's just not that much of it, okay? The shift in the arrest ratio that, you know, Homeland Security is giving us statistics on, you know, the number one way these people are coming into the country is by air, and then they overstay their visas, you know? I mean, this whole idea of a concrete wall and then a steel slat wall and some of these other examples. I mean, there's precious few areas where the thing would even work, and even that's questionable as to whether or not it would work. We've seen repeatedly, for example, in California between Calexico and San Ysidro, I mean, they get pretty creative and they actually make pretty sophisticated tunnels under the damn thing in Nogales,
right,
Arizona. And Nogales is even more of a kind of a greater complex issue, because in Nogales, you have Nogales, Sonora on one side of the border, Nogales, Arizona on the other, and both cities are connected by this kind of labyrinth of a sewer system. Okay. And guess what? They run through the sewer system. So it's just one of these things where it's just not a workable solution. And I think that that was noted by Speaker Pelosi the other day, that there are other ways to do this that are high tech, and there are ways to, you know, address this issue. And putting up, you know, a 5th century solution to a 21st century problem just quite frankly isn't workable. And that money, believe it or not, could be spent in better ways.
Yeah, it's stupid. Let's go to the shutdown itself, and we'll go to what his nuclear options that he's exploring and the ramifications of those in a minute. But the shutdown is real. It's causing real problems and real not just heartburn, but, you know, bordering on crisis. What are the areas we should be watching in the effect of the shutdown right now?
Well, we're already having problems in California. Reports are coming out of Joshua Tree that people have been illegally cutting down trees to get access, and they've been using four-wheel drive vehicles and off-road vehicles and tearing the place up and doing damage to Joshua Tree Monument, as well as the trash problem. We're seeing that in other national parks as well. You're also seeing other issues developing in the following areas, okay, critical to the entire American nation: food safety inspections, environmental review processes, federally funded scientific research. All that is ground to a halt. Today, the Air Traffic Controllers Union brought several members of both the Senate and the House their paycheck stubs for tomorrow, which had 0.00 for, you know, net. Okay. In other words, they weren't paid anything. You know, people are human. And we already have TSA agents that have quite literally walked off the job and then just quit. They started as sick outs and now they're just quitting. And of course, that imperils, you know, the nation's airports in terms of just overall security. We're seeing, you know, the entire United States Coast Guard, and I mean all 44,000 of them, okay, working with no pay. And I, you know, we were catching stories today. As a matter of fact, I believe it was your own Senator Kamala Harris's office alerted us to a young Coast Guard family that he had just started, and he's now in boot camp, and his family is facing eviction because they can't pay the rent. You know, there's these are stories that we're hearing over and over again, and it's not just the federal enclave of the Washington metropolitan area. It's other places, California, anywhere you have a major military presence or you have ancillary support missions. You've got the entire border and customs protection people working without paychecks. Here's irony for you. Virtually all of Trump's Secret Service detail, both uniform and executive protective details, they're not getting paid. It's a real issue, okay? Food has to be put on the table. Rent has to be paid. Mortgages have to be met. We're hearing stories now from people, you know, that are, you know, there was a mother that wrote another member of Congress, and, you know, she's trying to set up a GoFundMe so that she can pay for her son's college tuition because it's due in installments, and that's at a university. We're hearing horror stories of even community colleges where that's going on. Now, this is just, and it's spreading. At some point, the federal government will completely grind to a halt. We have contractors, you know, and I was kind of a little bit angered earlier today. A member of the U.S. House, a Republican from Maryland's Eastern Shore, the first congressional district, which is basically the entire Eastern Shore area, was asked by a reporter from The Hill, which is one of the news outlets in Washington, about, you know, the shutout and the people that aren't getting paychecks and things of that nature. And, you know, here's the question. Just ask GOP Representative Andy Harris, who's also a doctor, how he feels about federal workers who live in his district not getting paychecks starting tomorrow. He shrugged and said, they'll get paid eventually. All right, that's a rather flip response. Well, federal workers may get paid, but the janitors at the Smithsonian Institution, the security guards at the Smithsonian Institution, the folks that work for guest services, okay, and on and on and on, not only are they not getting paid, but they won't get back pay because that's not part of their federal contracts. So what happens to those folks when they get evicted or they lose their cars because their car payments can't be made or their insurance gets canceled and the states start yanking their license plates back, you know? So
and Brody, what happens if during this period, because, you know, we're in winter and the world is a treacherous place, a natural disaster happens somewhere in the United States. What happens?
Well, this is where it gets even more dicey because Trump is now saying that he is going to, and the White House staff has already been working on it, declaring, a national emergency. Now, he has the authority to do that. The problem is, under the statute, and I won't bore our listenership, it's a rather long, convoluted thing. Essentially, it boils down to this. He can declare a national emergency, and he can divert Defense Department funds and other funds that are at his disposal that have already been appropriated by the Congress into, you know, his national emergency. Okay? So that means that he can literally take money away from FEMA for rebuilding in Puerto Rico and the Gulf Coast in Florida. He can move money out of the Defense Department for training, which was essentially shut training down. So he's got the ability. He can move any money he wants that has already been allocated and appropriated by Congress. Now, mind you, there will be lawsuits all over the place on this one, but constitutionally he's in the clear, okay? So it will get ugly.
So he would pull it from these other places that are getting money right now to fund the wall. But if a new disaster hit, would FEMA simply not show up?
They just wouldn't have the money, Rob.
Yeah. So that leads
basic.
Yeah. I wanted to get your feedback on his latest thing with California and the fires.
Oh God. Yeah, that was the tweet after. One thing is he is at least predictable. That tweet came the day after his little feces show of a national address, which, by the way, four or five of us decided we would, you know, just we would literally count how many falsehoods and lies that he put out. In the 9 minutes he was on the air, he was averaging a lie about every 34 seconds, which is kind of a new record for him. He basically tweeted, he accused California of mismanagement. He took aim and said that, you know, it's a disaster, it's ludicrous. And he's ordered FEMA to withhold money for the disasters. Now, it should be noted that the vast majority of forest and forest land is held by the federal government in California, which is also true of most of the western states. I think the state of California actually is responsible for maybe 9%. You know, so it's like, okay, you're going to take money away from these places like, you know, Northern California and Paradise, for example, that poor town, which has essentially been wiped literally off the map. And that's it. You're just going to take all this money away. Why? Because of a, you know, fit of pique. All right. The question is whether or not he's actually ordered FEMA to do it. We haven't seen anything yet that would indicate he actually has. But the mere fact that he did just started a scramble. Of course, you know, once again, Wednesday, besides the inauguration of Jared Polis in California, also happened to be the inauguration of Gavin Newsom in California as California's governor. And, you know, he's not even put his hand on the Bible to say, I do, and Trump is tweeting, I'm taking money away. So it's like, let's start our administration off because, you know, we have a crisis that we're going to have to address because the president of the United States is, you know, basically, as Senator Schumer has characterized it, throwing a tantrum.
Let's go to the chess game, though, on this. What leverage does California have on this taking the money away business when California contributes a huge amount of revenue to the federal government? I mean, it's like we're a huge economy all on our own. And I can't believe that there isn't a way for California to go, you know, no taxation without representation. And I know it's radical, but close off the spigot the other direction.
It would be, you know, awesome if that would be a fiscal reality or if that could actually be done. I personally, my own personal opinion now, and I'd love to see it, but obviously that's never going to occur. It's very, very, very problematic. But then again, this is exactly what we've come to expect from this person. It's combative. It's immature. I kind of run out of adjectives with this one. At the end of the day, he is running the White House the same way he ran The Apprentice. So that's about the best analogy I can give you. I've talked to my colleagues.
No, I think that's very accurate.
I've talked to my friends in the White House press corps, and they more or less agree with that. I think everybody's just kind of gobsmacked at the, you know, it's just continuous. It just keeps going on and on. And the thing is, McConnell and the Republican leadership enable it. Now, the House of Pelosi's made it absolutely clear that's not happening, but the Senate's doing this.
That circles back to my original question at the top of the show, you know, and when the media is going to, you know, really heat up that part of the spotlight, because those discussions have been a little bit minimal because, you know, the thing that Donald Trump is doing, and I'm going to put big air quotes around this, right, is he knows how to keep the attention on him. In a certain respect, the media is falling for it because the real solution to this is without him. And that could be the story. I mean, that could be the focus.
There's such a complacency in my profession that's just disgusting. And they just keep missing the point. The story has got to be focused in on the context of it. And way too many, you know, the smaller media operations like the Daily Beast, BuzzFeed, Salon, The Atlantic, some of the smaller operations, you know, they're getting it. There's some good journalism there. They seriously, and I will note, the vast majority of the reporters reporting on these things are the younger generation. Okay. I saw a study today that came out about, I think it was Facebook, you know, and no surprise there, but the highest percentage of fake news in social media, particularly Facebook, was being shared by people, you know, like I think it was like 63 and older. Okay. That's not a big shock. Okay. The younger generation is getting it. I'm not sure what the media is afraid of. I don't understand what the executives at Universal Comcast and the Disney Corporation, you know, and Time and everybody else that owns these conglomerates, what are they afraid of? They can't possibly be scared of Trump. There's just no way. Okay. What, you know, your job is to shine a spotlight on this. It's to say, hey, this is wrong. You guys did it 40-something years ago with Nixon. I mean, why the hell are you not doing it now? You know, quit concentrating on salacious. I really, honestly, truly believe they've gotten themselves so wrapped up in clickbait that they've forgotten what their jobs are. And it's just annoying.
Yeah.
Really.
No, agreed. Well, let's switch gears here a little bit.
Sure.
You mentioned in passing, and I'm not going to bust your chops on this, you actually mentioned two inaugurations in California when, in fact, one of them took place in Colorado. And that was Jared Polis. And what that is significant because it is the very first out gay governor in the United States history. We actually had one who was gay, but he came out leaving office, not going in.
New Jersey.
What are your thoughts?
Well, Governor Polis is just an absolute right choice for the citizens of Colorado. I had a lot of interactions with him when he was a United States Congressman from Colorado. He's exceptionally sharp. He's extremely progressive. He will do right by the citizens of Colorado. And the thing is that Jared is not someone that you need to, when you talk of it, should just be Governor Polis, not gay Governor Polis or the gay governor, because he's not that kind of a politician. He's literally one of those politicians for everybody. Doesn't matter what stripe you are. I think that he's also going to be able to kind of shift the thinking around. You know, Colorado's a little schizophrenic when it comes down to politics because you have little islands of blue and then you've got large patches of red. Just not even an hour and a half south of Denver is Colorado Springs. That's ground zero, okay, for the Christian crazies and, you know, the right and all the nonsense. And it has been for a while. There are parts of what we call the Western Slope, which is on the other side of the Rockies or the Front Range, and you've got entire areas there that are deep red, fairly conservative areas. You've got some ranching communities that are. And then you've got places that are blue, like Denver itself, some of the suburbs around Denver, Fort Collins and Greeley, both, of course, are university towns. Then you've got blue-collar, salt-of-the-earth places like Pueblo, Trinidad, Walsenburg. So there are places within the state that I think Jared will do exceptionally well with in terms of the things that are important to Coloradans. Infrastructure is a really big part of that. You're talking highways and you're talking, you know, things that, you know, make cities run and things like that. And Jared's got, I think, a really good, clear idea and vision of where that's going to be and what that's going to do. Now, that's not to say that, you know, he's not going to run into a share of, you know, problems in the state house with legislators. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of, you know, conservative lawmakers that aren't going to be thrilled with that. Yeah, it boils down to the same old tired argument between the two parties. You know, Republicans don't want government, and Democrats want, you know, government, and then there's taxing and spending and revenue. Yeah, at the end of the day, both parties have got to kind of like, you know, wake up to the idea that there's too many people in the United States now, so small government doesn't work. What you need to do, though, is you've got to have a government that actually does work. You have to have a government that is in tune with services and takes care of its citizens. You have to have a government that is fiscally responsible. And you have to understand that not everybody, okay, is going to make it to the 1%. In fact, the vast majority of people don't. And I think intuitively, especially in Colorado, Jared knows that. You know, you've got entire sections out on the plains, out towards Kansas and down towards Oklahoma on the border there, you know, and these are, you know, farm areas and ranch areas. And, you know, these people live and die with agriculture and cattle raising and things like that. And they've had a rough go of it. So, you know, they need subsidies and they need this help and they need kind of pushing things, you know, through. Whereas you have places like Denver where you've got high tech, you've got things going on, Boulder, you've got things going on at the university and, you know, innovation and infrastructure things happening there that are really good. I think that Jared is going to be able to kind of balance all of that out. Of course, like I said, you know, he's going to have his share of problems. I mean, he's got the Christian crazies in Colorado Springs, and that's going to be a serious challenge, a very serious challenge. Because as we've seen across the United States over the last 40 years that they've gotten themselves embedded into politics, kind of like a tick, if you will, it's like Barry Goldwater said, you can't compromise with these people.
Right, and you can't.
Jared's going to have a problem with that, and he's going to have to work with it.
But he got elected in spite of them.
I think because the people of Colorado have gotten to the point where it's pragmatic, and I think there's something else that's happening, and it's a shift. And that is that the Christian crazies, the American Taliban, are really, really, really starting to lose their grip on the American political system. And that's something that is necessary. And I think the other part of it is people look at Governor Polis and they realize that the governor is just like them. There's no difference between the governor and the guy next door. You know, this idea that, you know, he's Satan incarnate because he's gay, that type of prejudicial thinking has been minimized and stripped away, and ironically, because the Christian crazies basically did it to themselves, thankfully. But I think the Coloradoans recognize, okay, that the governor will be someone who could move the ball closer to the goalpost for all Coloradoans. And I think that's something that, you know, that was a major talking point in this campaign. Not unlike what Gavin Newsom did in California, although Gavin obviously is not gay, but a lot of the same themes ran through Gavin's campaign. I honestly think what we're starting to see here is people have had enough of polarity.
Right. Well, we've given Gavin an honorary gay card, so, you know, it's cool.
Okay.
He is not gay, although I would much rather find out that he was than a lot of other people. But he is definitely an LGBTQ icon with what he did with same-sex marriage and, you know, kind of his role, civil disobedience and renegade actions when he was mayor of San Francisco. He's got rainbow blood running through his veins, I'm convinced, in terms of being an ally. But going back to Colorado, it is not unheard of for the chief executives of different states to fall into the running for the chief executive of the United States. Do you think we have just seen on the horizon potentially the first gay president?
No. I think what we need to see first is the American public is going to finally have to get over its misogyny and put a woman in the Oval Office. That would be the next logical and, quite frankly, best step the American nation could do, is to finally break the stranglehold on the Oval Office of white male privilege. It broke it in terms of race when it elected then Senator Barack Obama of Illinois, and he did a fairly effective job president over 8 years, enough that he actually was reelected to office. But I think the next stepping stone is going to have to be a woman president. I think what we've seen because of the Me Too movement, what we've seen because of what's come out of things like Parkland, Florida and the shootings, what we've seen with the other issues that are being raised, you know, women truly are good leaders. They're very effective leaders. I am Senator Kamala Harris of California has indicated that she'll run in 2020. And I don't think she's going to be the only female running for the high office. I think that the American people, that's going to be, I think that's next. I'm not ruling out the possibility that one day, there'll be, a president of the United States who happens to be gay. Okay. I'd like to see it, but I think we're probably going to need to see a very talented, creative, and smart woman sitting in that chair first.
Right. Okay, cool. So one thing you touched on was the alt-right quote unquote Christian ilk, particularly in Colorado, but we'll put it anywhere. And I wanted to focus on the current organization representing at least part of them, the Liberty or the Heritage Foundation, and their issue around the anti-lynching bill.
Oh, you mean Liberty Council, not Heritage Foundation? Yeah, you mean Matt
Chamberlain
in Orlando?
Yeah, yeah.
He's, you know, this guy is just, if you'll remember the case of the woman in Kentucky that refused to marry people, Kim Davis, she was represented
Kim
by
Davis.
Liberty Council. Yeah, Liberty Council has been, there are three principal law firms and law groups that are anti-women's reproductive rights and very much anti-LGBTQI. Liberty Council is one. The Alliance Defending Freedom in Scottsdale, Arizona is another one. Liberty Council, I'll note, is headquartered in Orlando, Florida, but it also is affiliated with Jerry Falwell's Liberty University in Virginia, where it got its start. And then the Thomas More Center in Detroit, Michigan, is another one. As you know, we had a guest on last week whose mother is being represented by that group. So, you know, the woman that's suing her daughter. Transition.
Right.
Well, these three groups are the worst of the worst. However, when it comes down to the first group that got labeled a hate group, the Poverty Law Center, the Liberty Council was first. I don't necessarily think they think that as, you know, a good thing, but that's what it was. Last month, the Senate passed a bill unanimously that had absolutely no opposition from either party. A bill that would explicitly make lynching a federal crime, okay? The problem that Liberty Council and the Christian Crazies have is that also included in the main portion of the bill was LGBTQI people and trans people, okay? Now, Staver wants to have the lawmakers remove the bill on sexual orientation and gender identity. The bill's going to the House next. The Senate's already passed. It's got to go to the House. Okay. And of course, you know, for Staver and the crew at Liberty Council, this is fairly typical. Now, Staver told One News Now, which is a flawed news operation run by the American Family Association in Tupelo, Mississippi, which is another hate group. Again, Christian crazies. That the day after all this was reported, you know, and I'm quoting a statement, Liberty Council has received death threats as a direct result of the false media narrative. One person whose identity is being traced said all leaders must die. You know, blah, blah, blah. Some in the media have falsely reported that Liberty Council is opposed to banning lynching, you know. It's the usual same old tired thing with the Christian crazies, okay? It's like they don't want a hate crime law specifically because murder is a hate crime to start with anyway. Now they're doing it to lynching. And the thing of it is, okay, that, you know, it's a non-starter. But and then they get the death threats, and I'm like, well.
I'm really – you know, I'm absolutely 100% opposed to anybody getting death threats, period. However, in that spectrum, I mean, if you go out and basically advocate that somebody, some group should not be protected specifically for not only death, but horrendous lynching-style death, I'm kind of like, you're on your own there. You're on your own, buddy. I'm not going to lose sleep over the reaction you get off of that. But, Brody, I want to ask you one comment they made. Just, you know, and I know I'm asking you to explain the idiotic, but I think I'll try anyway. So this is, I mean, you know, the death threats and all that is out there. But the thing that really baffled me was their justification in the outset of their position on this. And his statement, Matt Stavers' statement was, and I quote, "This is a way to slip it, being LGBTQ rights, in under a so-called anti-lynching bill, and to then sort of circle the wagon and then go for the juggler at some time in the future," unquote. And I'm sitting there reading that going, what are they afraid of? I mean, are they afraid that LGBTQ people are going to be able to, I don't know, serve in the military? Oh, wait, we're allowed to do that. Oh, no, maybe they're allowed that, afraid that LGBTQ people are going to be allowed to get married. Oh, no, we're allowed to do that. I mean, what the hell are they worried about?
It goes back to the same thought train legalistically that they employed and then deployed against the Matthew Shepard, James C. Byrd Hate Crimes Act, which they fought hard against. They do not believe that LGBTQI people should be a protected class for anything. Doesn't matter what it is. And the baseline for them is that LGBTQ, well, first of all, trans people don't exist. That's a mental illness. Second of all, you can't be queer because that doesn't exist. Okay, bisexual, you know, that's a mental illness. And lesbian and gay is a sin. The bottom line for them, okay, which is why I call them Christo fascists and I call them the American Taliban. And these days I just call them Christian crazies because I've just kind of given up. Is that we don't have a right to exist. And therefore, we should have no legal protections anywhere in the spectrum. It doesn't matter if it's marriage, hate crime laws, anti-lynching laws, doesn't matter. They are so obsessed. That's the only word I can come up with. And they have so much hatred, okay? And they have turned the LGBTQI community into, you know, the boogeyman. And they completely dehumanize and disenfranchise, okay, their fellow citizens. And they're predicating it, okay, on, quite frankly, and this will probably light our switchboard up, you know, the mythology of their religious beliefs, that which they're under your constitution are protected. Okay, they want more.
Well, but Bernie, here's the irony is the what you're calling the mythology beliefs or whatever, it's not even in there. They're not in there.
Oh, I know. Trust me.
You know, it's like the only people that seem to be authorized in the Bible to get lynched were people that violated, you know, biblical laws. Anyway, it just is so absurd to me from the beginning to the end. They've kind of gone to the ultimate in going down with their ship. I mean, there are things that I get where they want to protect this or protect that concept, but the idea that they have to go out and seem to be in any way implying a pro-lynching stance, and there's no way they can make the argument they are without, no matter what they think they intend, there's no way to do it without them essentially coming out in some sense and being pro-lynching, and which is an absurd, awful, evil, ridiculous, insane idea, you know, period.
Welcome to the world of the Christian crazies. Before we run out of time, there's a couple things I did want to note. Tragically, earlier today in Puerto Rico, we had probably one of the best known openly gay rappers in Puerto Rico, in fact, in the rap world, Kevin Frett, you know, 24-year-old. He was also an extremely outspoken advocate for the LGBTQ community, was murdered in Santurce, which is one of San Juan, Puerto Rico's busiest and most densely populated neighborhoods. He was shot about 8 times while driving a motorcycle. He was taken to the regional medical center there where he was pronounced dead. So that's a real blow for the LGBT advocacy group in Puerto Rico, and my heart goes out to them. And then, unfortunately, in Alabama, last Sunday, we had a woman shot to death in Montgomery, and, you know, another trans woman of color. And unfortunately, again, typical, the local press misgendered her, and the family did, but the advocate, Neil Broberman, and his crew over there put the piece out, and got the news out to the community. So we've already started 2019 off with our first trans deaths, and if anything, history being an indicator, you know, it may be just as bad as last year was. So that's kind of unfortunate. So our heart goes out to the trans community of color in Alabama for their loss, and of course to the LGBT advocacy groups in San Juan and Puerto Rico, our sincere condolences to them as well.
Well, yeah, that's horrible and to the point, and why anti-violence protections are needed, and why anybody would be arguing against them is ridiculous and insane. Brody, you made a point. We're down to our last 2 minutes. I leave it to you to give some final thoughts for the evening.
I just think that if you have the ability, and I don't do this very often, but pick up your phone. You need to call your elected representatives in Washington. You need to let them know that they have just simply got to get off the dime. You've just got to call them and email them and pester them and just make it known. The number for the United States Capitol building is area code 224-3121. And all you have to do is ask for representative of your state and just let them know. You know, the time has come that, you know, the people need to stand up and they need to just, you know, put an end to it. And it's up to the Senate now, and you've got to do something with the Senate. And other than that, Rob, that's it.
Okay. And can you give that number one more time just so it's clear?
Yeah, the U.S. Capitol building. It's area code is 202-224-3121. And that's the telephone number to the United States Capitol. And the switchboard operator will connect you directly with the Senate office you request or the House. So, again, 202-224-3121. And reach out to your representatives and your senators and let them know they have got to get the legislation passed, and then they've got to override the presidential veto, period.
Yeah, and focus on the Republicans, folks. Let them know they can be heroes in this thing, and they don't have to be beholden to you-know-who. But anyway, I want to thank you for listening to this installment of Rated LGBT Radio. We will be back here again next week with another scintillating topic, we promise. Also, listen to Out in Santa Cruz on Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can hear that on www.ksdo.com. That is Saturday night. For Brody Levesque and myself, we want to thank you, and we look forward to being with you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!